Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info.info, and today is Tuesday, September the 8th, 2015. It is the 8th, yes. This is hour 281 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor, and return to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon, using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And I want to say thank you, James, from North Wales, Pennsylvania, for hosting the hours, or paying for the hours to be hosted. Thank you so much. Marcy and I did it for a long time, and it's nice that he's doing it now. Thank you very much. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello. Welcome back. And I just, well, before I started, I was saying that when Sharon was talking last time, my mouth was almost on the table, open, and it just blows me away to hear Sharon and what he had to say. And it was nice. Yesterday, I got a nice letter from Kathleen that I'll read after I read Wendy's. Let's do Wendy's first and then, well, beforehand. A few weeks ago, James from North Wales, Pennsylvania, sent, I got to get down to it, it's down on the listen page. The date is 18 August. He subscribes to this thing called A Word a Day. And the word happened to be that day, wherewith. And he thought he should send it to me because of the usage. Very short, he says, "Hi, Curtis. I belong to a mailing list that provides a vocabulary word a day. Today's selection is below. Please note the source for the usage. Take care, Jim." And when you look down, the word came from the Urantia book, 1955, and its usage, three lines. "When a brilliant student completes his work ahead of schedule, he is granted an award of time and means wherewith he may execute some pet project of his own devising." And it came from the Urantia book, 1955, and there's a link there for anyone who would like to subscribe. And thank you, James, for sending that. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention it before. And let's go first to a few days ago when Wendy wrote. Subject was Energy Pulse. "Dear Gents, my own understanding of the following matter is very limited, and I hope that Shaharon could shed some light on this recent event of the large microwave energy pulse, and if that has any reference to last week's discussion on Urantia's current movement within the galactic plane." She signs it, "As always, loving greetings from New Zealand, find Wendy," and with a link to a large microwave energy pulse from outer space hits planet Earth, UFO sightings hotspot. And you can go to the listen page and see that link. And I don't know if Shaharon wants to comment on that, or...
Oh, this is Eric.
Oh, hello.
Eric?
Eric.
Yes.
This is Eric Shaharon. Well, welcome.
Well, your instrumentation is having problems. Yes. The graphic that is posted is very interesting, but the anomalies are caused through by the instrumentation that you use. This instrumentation is a type of combined use of data gathered through various satellite images that are interpolated. In other words, they take two things and kind of look in between and make a guess. Occasionally, these interpolations can conform to a type of transient anomaly, which is a instrument error. However, much more importantly, if you were to study the actual underlying correct information, you'll notice the march of the spirals. These are all the hurricanes that are generated about the belt. That is very significant. It is not normal for your planet to have a belt of hurricanes. But if you were to take a closer look, not only of your planet, but take a closer look of Jupiter, Saturn, other planets nearby, even the smaller ones, Mars, Venus, they're all having very interesting phenomena, all caused by, yes, the galactic plane. This entry into the galactic plane is causing these types of phenomena. Please be assured that these things, these weather patterns, earthquakes, are all indeed caused by the movement through the plane. However, in the case where you are seeing these types of anomalies, very disturbing if you were to believe that they were actual measurements. They're not. They're errors within the equipment itself. Therefore, it is a glad thing for me to see that there are many eyes turned toward your planet's present position, instrumentation, and readings. For these things at one time could not at all be held by your people. Only a few years ago, such readings would not even exist. Yet now you are venturing very close to the type of instrumentation that we developed many eons ago. Our instruments, of course, are much more reliable and have a much greater depth in information and insight. Do not be troubled, though, that your instrument may be flawed once in a while. For much more than 90% of the time, it is in giving you good and reliable information. I've turned this conversation over to my friend, Tia Tadakjik. Tia. Hello? This is Tia Tadakjik. I would also want you to understand that it is because of your destiny that Eric was very glad that you are watching out for the good of your planet. But keep an eye on the purpose of your life. Do not think that you must simply save your lives. Rather, be glad, like Eric said, your lives could never have comprehended such information only a few short years ago. With all of that, never forget your development and destiny and higher awakening continues to await you. I set aside now. Curtis, you may continue your conversation.
Thank you, Shahron. So, well, Michael, was that Ted that came on after Eric?
Yeah.
I thought so. Well, that was wonderful. That never happened. Thank you very much.
Apparently they're right next to each other or something.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah.
Okay, well, that's interesting that he would say that our instrumentation is at fault. And
he didn't necessarily say that it was in error, but over most of the time, it's correct. So that's, so it's, if you have instruments that are not giving you the right information, you know, it's sort of like if you're on your airplane and you have a low oil pressure gauge goes to nothing, you know, and then it bounces back up and you got full pressure again, and you kind of like wonder, is this thing reliable? But then you notice, well, most of the time it's reading correctly. When you finally land the plane, you find out, oh, it's a loose wire. Mm-hmm. So most of the time it was trying to give you correct information. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know just what you mean.
I don't think it's the loose wire. I don't think it's... He said it was a matter of interpolation.
Yeah.
Interpolation. A computer is doing so much work nowadays. I mean, we can't really believe how much computation really goes into the computers around us. In supercomputers, you know, at one time we were, you know, teraflops and all of that stuff, or computing power. Now they know, so that's not even valid how many floating point operations you can make in a second. They do more than that. You can't even measure the power of computers with something like mFlops, which is millions of floating point operation, or teraflops. But you actually have to look at what the work is done and if it's done correctly and all of that other stuff now. Garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah, well... A lot of information to digest.
Yeah, but the interesting point was made was the march of the spirals, or the hurricanes marching across the same latitude. So that's quite unusual. Yes, very unusual. And for us in Hawaii to have missed them all, they all bounced off of us, you know, and needless to say, I, you know, did have some, you know, desire that was made known to them that put us in the bubble, you know, like you were in the bubble with the hurricane. So apparently you can see how the bubbles was working. One of the hurricanes went right around us and then died off as a... become not even a tropical storm, then it started up all over again as it passed Hawaii. And that's in the March of the Spirals, if you look into that video there, that shows the anomaly, the graphic, but don't pay attention too much to that graphic. It's interesting to see the error, but it's not a true reading.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not a true reading. Wow, interesting. Well,
The rest of it is, you know.
Mm-hmm. The rest of it is.
Oh yeah, which is I never saw that much information thrown at us that easily.
Well, it was Hurricane Sandy that Shaharon said that there was going to be a cocoon around us.
Yeah.
And boy, if that's exactly what happened, people are still recovering from that.
Yeah.
And when I drive around here, let's say, I'll say 8 miles from here, it's just like all of a sudden I'll go up a road and it's just, look at all these trees. Oh my gosh, this must have been Hurricane Sandy that did this. And it's just like devastation all over the place. And then it seemed like all of our roads were all cut off for for days. They just, everything just covered the roads. And about a quarter mile here, part of a branch came down off a tree, and that was the biggest thing we had close by, but nothing. It was just, I told Marcy to come out on the lanai, listen across the river, up and over the hill. It sounded like a huge freight train was over there. I'm like, gosh, you got to come upstairs and listen to this. And thank you, Sharon. Because we live in a beautiful place, but it's a dangerous to be here at times, but we have more things on wheels now. So Kathleen writes on the 7th of September, this is yesterday, I was sitting there and I hear bing, and I read Kathleen's note as it just came across, and I go, wow. Subject matter is the last podcast, 280. Hi, Curtis and Michael. I have spent this Labor Day weekend in a labor of love. I've written out the words of Ted Chaharon from Podcast 280 for you to post, Curtis. Deeply felt thanks to you, Chaharons, for the enlightenment and for the love letter. They are both priceless to me, and I treasure them in my heart. And to you, Curtis and Michael, I hope that you realize deep in your hearts my love and gratitude to you both for what you have brought forward into my life. As always, love and joy, Kathleen. What a nice thing to say to us, Kathleen. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathleen.
Yes, I was really moved by Chaharon once again on this last hour, and so I've taken what Kathleen, so then she sent another email with her transcription that started at about the 40 or the 4 minute mark, and I just did a little bit beforehand what led up to that. And interesting, I just said to Michael, interesting that somebody came on my track when Chaharon came on and said, yes, Curtis, this is Tadaptic. And then someone came on my track and said, hello. And then someone came on Michael's track and said, Ted. And then Chaharon said, I am here. I wrote that out in the transcription.
Say that again. I mean, what happened? Is this unusual?
Well, I've never seen this before. And
you mean just like, because your tracks are laid in digitally by your software, right?
Well, yes, I have since the digital days.
Yeah.
And I went from the analog system on, and then I went to digital in hour 147.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to, because we had a problem with the analog. I would say something to you, it would go all the way to Hawaii, and then it would come back to me on your track.
Yeah, then I have an echo or
something. It sounded like I always had an echo, but since you would speak and it would just come to me, there was no echo when you would speak. So I sounded like I was in a tunnel all the time. And then I was able to put you on one track only and me on another track only. And that's how it is. So right now
But then some other track opened up?
And it's the same. I'm recording with two tracks, your track and my track.
And then how did Chaharon get in there?
Well, Chaharon comes on in your track.
And that's what you said that didn't happen. It went in another track.
Well, this time it went on your track. He says, Chaharon says, yes, Curtis, this is Tadaptic.
Right.
And then on my track, it said, hello. And then on your track, it said, Ted. So it says, or it was like I said, hello, Ted. But my voice was on your track. I don't know how. But it wasn't my voice. And Ted wasn't my voice either. And it wasn't yours. And it wasn't Chaharon's. And then Chaharon said, yes, I am here. It all happened within a second. at the 1 minute and 48 second, 0.375 seconds.
Interesting.
It is really...
It get captured like that, yeah.
I can send you a photograph of a JPEG of it, and you can see the tracks. See,
just changing.
You can see the voice here and the voice there, and so what is that about? I don't know. And then
they're toying around with us.
I don't know.
They're playing with us. Anyway, they get their information to us anyway.
It does. It's really nice.
Yeah.
And Kathleen's entire transcription of Shaharon's words are all on here. And
what a job. That's a big job, Kathleen.
It is. I've done it, and a few other people have done it, and we all know what a big job it is, but you really have to be moved to do it. Something has to really inspire you to, and it's what Shaharon had to say. And so it looks really, really nice. I have different colors for Shaharon and for you, but this is mostly just Shaharon and words that she transcribed, and it's on the listen page, and it's in this hour, 281. Mm-hmm. So people can read it again, and I've sent it to my friend Gamash, and he's just starting to read the Urantia book, and starting to become. Starting to make his head spin. And then he hears about me talking with you and Shaharon, and he looks at me, and that makes his head spin. And I was just saying, if anyone ever says to me, "Hi, what's new with you?" I can't say, "Oh, well, last Tuesday I was speaking with Shaharon." So no one seems to understand that, but it's all between all the listeners and us. But this time, Ted and Eric Shaharon came on. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So this was... beautiful.
The word wherewith? Was it wherewith?
Wherewith. That was...
Wherewith?
Yeah, that was a word that was in the Urantia book. It's not a word people use, or maybe they do, but that's where it came from.
And that was and it's in reference to, you might say, vacation.
Yes. Yeah, it's...
kind of like a vacation.
Well...
Wherewith you could when do you another
have,
project.
That's right, when you have some extra time. Now you have means and wherewith.
This is one of the things that Tan and Nella were enjoying. They were not on assignment. They were actually kind of on their own project. And many times the Celestials themselves are interacting with our planet. Urantia, people on it. They're all volunteers. They all come, not, you know, like assigned, except for maybe the Most Highs. The Most Highs themselves are actually on assignment. But many of the rest are just volunteering, you know. Mm. And it's a work of love, you know. It's not something they have to do, or they don't, you know, it's the idea we're stuck in this mentality of, oh, you got to work, otherwise you won't get paid, and if you don't get paid, you can't pay your bills,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's right.
So, you know, but that's not how they operate. It's very different, and they look forward to volunteering beyond the aspects of their specialty. Many of them have specialties, and others have outgrown various specialties and move on. So my graduate guide said, that little guy, you know, we actually have a picture of someone who looks just like him. Shorty, I guess. He said he was volunteered for that, for this assignment, you know, and it would help him out a lot. Even cause him to jump way ahead of others who go through the normal training. So it was really interesting to work with him, because he's a not human, but I would say a human personality. You know, it's operating very, very much very close. And this is something that they gain by working with us, the human nature, you know, the human personality and interface.
Did you say they gain by working with us?
Yeah, they gain an affinity, or, you know, a kind of level of experience, so that we're not like, culturally, or you might say, foreign to each other. Become, I kind of felt like, oh, he's just another person. It's my most favorite of all, because he was my guide, and I told him I wanted to come back to see him, and he said, you'll be back. I said, will you be here? He says, it's a long time. I cannot say if I will be here. But if I am, you will surely see me again. But I think he's not here anymore, there anymore. It's a long time. He moved on, probably. There are many other graduate guides and guides that are actually functional. Working with different people, they're preparing a much larger host of you might say the core, you know, a core of mortals, guardians of destiny. Working with the guardians. Guardians of destiny would be like the Shaharuns.
Well, if they're not volunteering, what are they doing? I mean, what else are they doing?
They have many specialties. Mm-hmm. Let's look at some of the ones that you see as celestial artisans, the responsible for crop circles. They're also responsible for the picture that Kathleen took, showing the heart shape, love letter. And you could spot them as the orbs. The orbs are also seen by crop circles as they're being formed. So these are the celestial artisans. Yeah. So they have a level of higher dimensional affinity and abilities. Some of them, when they do come as volunteers, do not come back in any form that we can relate to easily, like my my graduate guide friend. He was just a little guy, embodied physically. I could play games with him, and but there are others who only move at a level which is not necessarily embodied as what we think of them as being embodied. A person needs to be embodied, but yet they're embodied. They have a core or location of their personality, their being. They're embodied in a higher dimensional body many times, which can transition to a way of us being able to see them as we can perceive them as, you know, as a personality or as a person. They can actually take that, but it may not necessarily be a physical thing. It's more of how they can appear. They all often will appear the same. It's like my angel that actually I've met several times and always appears as the same guy when he comes in human form. Kind of a middle-aged man, and most of the time kind of correcting me or pushing me away from dangerous decisions. Yeah. The one, of course, which was he was seen very clearly as a person was my wife and I standing at a stand at Times Square. There was a stand where this guy was selling some pastries. He came over and said, "Them things will kill you." And he's standing right in front of the vendor, and I was thinking, "My goodness, he's got the nerve and say, right in front of the vendor, it's killing his business. Don't buy those things; they'll kill you." You know. And when we asked the vendor, it says, "How do you like that guy? He just what guy? There's no one here. There's just you and him, you and you two. No one else here." Don't be ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, no, there was this guy standing right here, right next to it, saying that, you know, your stuff can be deadly.
Deadly.
And said, "No, there's no one here, no one ever. Don't get ridiculous. You go on your way. Don't bother me anymore." So we turned around, because we turned around immediately right after that, when we just said, "Yeah, he just took," and he says, "There's no one here." As soon as he said, "There's no one here," we turned around. He wasn't there. And the nearest doorway or hallway was approximately 50 feet away, maybe. That's a long way. You know, so maybe 100. I think it went between 50 and 100 feet away. Actually, the next doorway was about 150 feet away. The closest wall, but then the entrance into a place. And we spent a good 5 minutes looking in all those doorways for this guy. And that was kind of interesting. But it's for real. So, you know, think about me trying to explain this to somebody who says, "Oh, yeah, all right." Either that or their eyes glaze over and get on to the next subject. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, yeah. So everyone has to make up their mind and test. But when it comes down to looking at those images that we get from our present technology, it can be misinterpreted. We got to be careful. Yeah. We want reliable information. And when we have information that is reliable, then it becomes serious business. Yeah.
Well, you said that they were responsible for the crop circles. You know, mentioned this once in a while, but I always wish the news media, I mean, if I had a wish, they would say, "Oh, here's today's crop circle that happened yesterday in the UK," and show us a few photographs and move on to the next subject. But just show us the new ones. They don't say anything. Mm-hmm. They don't show us. And they are so gorgeous. And people would become aware of them, and they would wonder about them.
Well, not only wonder, many times they introduce us into the next observable phenomena, or help us interpolate or interpret data that we will be getting to our own instrumentation. And it was interesting to see some of the crop circles that looked like the spheres that were kind of running around the sun. And they almost look exactly the same. And it has changed. The sun is could have been in a much more dynamic, powerful phase in cycle 24. But apparently cycle 24 has gone exactly the opposite in terms of the sunspot cycle, the 11 and a half year sunspot cycle. But more importantly, the other cycle, the big cycle, the galactic plane, the excursion into the galactic plane, that cycle is, you know, right in it right now. And we are seeing a kind of phenomena that was predicted even by Jesus Christ himself. And this brings about a close assimilation time frame when the celestial invitation will be more or less broadcast, in a sense, to the human race as a whole, and become much more important. The politicians themselves are walking a very dangerous line with some of them. They're actually doing some dastardly stuff. And
what can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, when you look at the techniques used to get into power, they're pretty well laid down, and how the orchestration of the election of, or you might say, the leadership. It's not an exact science, but it becomes somewhat of a technique that can be repeated, you know, and can almost always try to find people that they can manipulate and use. And these are sometimes you might call the captains of the industries or whatever, those that lead the industry one way or the other. But these industrial powers that be are sometimes working in the a way which isn't good for the planet, you know. And I think there are other forces involved, and these are not necessarily the same celestial beings that I have interfaced with. And they're, you might say, against the cause of the ascension. They actually wanted us to fail, still do, fail the ascension, because that is their destiny that they chose to leave, turn their back on, believing that there is no such thing as a divine higher destiny. And yet here we are openly invited into the higher destiny. Well, you know, so they have, you might say, workers involved in trying to trip the planet up all the time and keep it, you know, in a position of not being able to fully ascend, you know, and remain in a confused state. And this is where the Most Highs many times have had to affect intervention. You have to actually move into the affairs of the human race to keep us from being totally annihilated by our own hands sometimes too. So anyway, that's another story altogether.
That's a huge story. It's a huge story.
That's a story that, but it really is, you know, verified by the fact that we have, you might say, some traditions that point toward demons and devils, but these guys are real tricksters, and they don't function just to, you know, give us a hard time. They actually have a case that they're actually fighting, a kind of legal case. A case of justification. Yeah, so.
Huh.
Yeah.
You said justification?
Yeah, justification for their actions.
These tricksters?
Yeah, that the human race was never really worth it and they never had a destiny. So they never really stole a destiny from us. Because look at them, they really don't have a destiny. But actually, they're only pointing at a few. The grand majority of the human race is actually heading toward that destiny and moving toward it. Both openly in terms of ascending, in terms of our own knowledge and information, our technologies, but also in a higher level in terms of our consciousness and our soul and our divinity attainment little by little, and at the same time receiving the divine embrace. But they of course want to continue to thwart that, to make trouble in that area.
And are these people descendants of Lucifer?
Not descendants of Lucifer.
Maybe not descendants, but are they trained
but
by
they were
Lucifer?
you might say friends or allies.
Yeah,
Lucifer himself is kind of like been already recognized. For a while they were like, you know, our celestial friends were letting him wander around a bit, but then they decided that he better not. So he is held in a location that was meant for retraining. In other words, the preciousness of a soul is so precious that it's worth retraining a person. Attitude adjustment, sometimes you call that. But it's become essentially a detention planet now. So only the Luciferians and the rebels and those that side with it, even the humans who side with him, will find themselves on that detention world.
I see. Could you elaborate on that some more?
The detention world has been seen by various people, not because they were, when people were cast to hell. The idea of the detention world is very similar to hell, the idea of hell. But hell, in terms of what was talked about, a lot to do with simply physically dying in a place where you go where you physically die. But this is not that. It's an actual detention world. And people have been introduced to it, not because they were cast to it, but because they were told that it is a real place, and it's not for the human destiny. That's not it at all. But a human being can actually be put in that detention world if they side on the side of the fallen ones. And generally speaking, the fallen ones use the same techniques as a political campaign to you might say, lure people into making that kind of choice. You also give them the kinds of supposed rewards for working on that side. There is genuine, tangible and real rewards. When you look at the concept of the time, free time as being offered to celestials who are gifted, you know, this time, extra time, wherewith they can move into the areas of their own project, or moving into an area which they can volunteer in. That is something that is unselfish most of the time. In fact, all the time. But in the area and falling into this, the realm of this detention planet, generally it is self-serving. Self-serving people fall into that. Others serve the wrong because they no longer have allegiance to the divinity ascent career. They don't even believe it exists. And as a result, they get more and more entangled and entrenched in power, and power over others. And this many times causes them to fail in terms of their personal ascent empowerment, and they are no longer being able to be uplifted toward that divine destiny because they seek power, which is not how the nature of divinity works. Our lives are set to cause us to become very, very much like God. And the essence of God, the first source and center, is love. The divinity nature, or the divine nature, is a higher development of what we could call love, but it is higher because it has extra properties of personality development that we gain. So through our lives, we slowly mature and become more closely aligned with the love ascent career. And the divine nature, acuity, becoming like God. And this differentiates us from the power seekers, the self-servants, because they do not function by that alignment. They don't function in that close affinity toward the divine nature, and actually share and participate in the divine nature. Power is something, power and selfish attainment is not something that is part of the divine nature. If you notice, the entire universe was created by, you might say, God, for sharing, and then sharing with the very creatures he created, giving free will and not setting it up in a way that, you know, guarantees worship toward him as a recycling energy source. You know, instead, it's like we can cut our line if we want to, and by so doing, we can lose our place, or, you know, even be subject to retraining. Sometimes, hopefully never permanently, but many times it approaches that point in which there's no desire to retrain, and as a result it becomes permanent.
Well, you said that the soul was worth retraining.
Yes.
That's what you mean. That.
Yeah, but many times that is refused because will is what makes the soul precious, you know. And if...
Wait. The will?
Yeah, your personal precious uniqueness. It's, you know, it's not following a pre-programmed pathway.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
Yeah. In other words, we're free agents.
Uh-huh.
And as free agents, we can choose to take the divine ascent career, which has many tumbles and turns. And many times it affects us in terms of our own perception of what is true service. And, you know, we get challenged to actually die to ourselves in that ascent career. And it is someplace sometimes people turn at that point and refuse to die to themselves that they can be developed toward a much, much higher nature. Anyway, that's a little bit. One of the things that every person who walks through life will be asked at the end of the road of life is that question, which is very simple, a simple question, but our answer is something that we attain through life experience. That experience will have everything to do with how we answer it, which places us at a developed level. And the question is, what have we learned? What have you learned? Mm-hmm. And you can answer it any way you want. There is really no truly wrong answer, but there are many, many answers that are right, you know. So an answer which is, you know, the wrong answer, perhaps you might say, one that is destined for retraining might not be considered an answer at all, but an attitude. Yeah.
And that's the retraining.
That's the part that you can get a chance for retraining or attitude adjustment.
And you said that every person will be asked at the end of their life, what have you learned?
Yeah.
And when will you be asked this? I mean, when your life is over or when your life is almost over?
You might say at that transition point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. And this... sorry to go back to that detention world or the detention planet you mentioned, but did you say a human being can be put into a detention world?
Yeah. You're not supposed to be there, though. But they can choose to go there by their, you might say, alignment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or their alignment, their allegiance to. So if they align themselves with Lucifer, mm-hmm. it's almost guaranteed that if they remain that way, stubbornly, they would end up there.
Recently there were photographs from September 11, 2001 that were posted on the web that were in the basement or the underground of the White House. And the first photograph was Dick Cheney with one of his feet up on his desk as though he was having a good time. And he was looking at a television screen in the same room. Looked like he was the only one there. And the World Trade Centers were belting out all this black smoke, and he had his feet up. He looked like he was having just the time of his life. And maybe this is part of the people who would be in that detention world. So who would be putting these people into the detention world? I mean, there's a lot of violence to humanity, whether it's a large group or a small group.
Violence is not necessarily, what causes a person to move into that or to be locked into that detention planet or a prison planet.
I'm just trying to figure this out.
It's Allegiance 2.
Allegiance 2.
Yeah. And that would be also coming with that allegiance is along with it is the actual defiance of the first source and center. In fact, a complete defiance to the point that such a thing is impossible, cannot exist. There can be no God except oneself. And that is probably one of the hardest ruts to come out of. Stubborn.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. Recently I was talking to you about the Big Bang. And, I mean, you've seen things blow up no matter what it was, whether it was a firecracker or something. And yesterday I saw that. Do you ever hear of a stick bug? It's a bug that actually looks like a stick. You probably...
Yeah.
I saw one yesterday, and a friend of mine was standing there, and I said, how can you think that the Big Bang made this, and kangaroos, and all of us, and everything in the world, the whole universe couldn't have been created with an explosion or a Big Bang? I mean, it's God... Something created us. We didn't just come from nowhere.
Oh, it's amazing what people convince themselves to believe because they have within themselves this actual defiance of just that concept that there is more than themselves. I've met people like that. No matter what you do, you can't knock them out of that. Even at the death's door. Mm. Yeah.
Well, sometimes when you can't see something, you don't know it's there.
Well, that's not necessarily true. Because we've created instrumentation that we use all the time to see things that are not normally visible to our five senses and only made apparent through our instrumentation, which, of course, is used to verify, what we cannot see easily, which gives us a higher perspective of reality.
Well, we don't have any instrumentation to show us God.
Yes.
Yes?
Except Him within us.
Within us.
That is the greatest advantage we have. That little bit of secret was revelation because I was standing with... I was with the Dano, the teacher... And he said, come here, look at this. I said, what? I know what you're doing. You're drawing the drawing the solar system. He was drawing circles. He says, no, you want to know about God, didn't you? You want to know about the first source and center? You want to know about God?
Yes.
And you wanted to find him? And he says, yeah. Well, first of all, he's in you already. I said, what? Yeah. God is in you. He's already in you. Then he began to draw the circles. And I started wondering, how did that happen? He said, don't worry about that. Look at this, look at what I'm showing you. You have technology that will do that in no problem, no time. And we do. But in 1972, we couldn't draw on, like on a screen, you know, like that came out much later in the 80s with touch screens, things like that. And the seven psychic circles. And that's where I got introduced to that, as well as understanding that everyone has a personal, very, you might say almost private relationship into the attainment of the circles. Because it's between you and God within you. Yeah. And that attainment is something that rewards the individual with many verifications of the reality of the fact that that inward ascent, and the ascent is successful, making new levels of dimensional attainments. Why? When I look at Hawaii having a bubble around it, is something that I asked for, and I see it verified. But then I start getting a little bit shaky because I was just asking for the hurricane to bounce off of one that I knew of, and then we get one after another, after another, after another, and then it's like, my goodness, they're all bouncing off. And this is very, very comforting, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's comforting.
Yeah. There was something that happened there were some people that had trouble with the influence of the fallen demonic entities in their people's lives, you know, and sometimes it would manifest in people's lives in terms of crazy actions and stuff like that, and fearful behavior, like maybe it'd be like demon possessed, and these disciples they went forward and they told those demons to leave, and they did. The fallen ones stopped harassing these people, and they left. And what happened was, that was at the time when Jesus was wandering with them, walking with them, Jesus Christ. And he said, don't be amazed at this, but be amazed at the fact that that is an example that you are accounted for in the heavenlies, in heaven, that your names are written in heaven, and you essentially have divine citizenship. That is something that every person is invited to have, this divine citizenship. But it is something that you gain through practice, not simply have automatically. In other words, you have citizenship, but it's something that needs to be practiced, versus something that you fully attain immediately by saying a few words like aligning yourself. What you do is you end up aligning yourself to the divinity within oneself, and that is the huge advantage of the initial steps of divinity attainment while in the body. And then you start gaining more and more and more and more and more, and you start wondering, oh, this is what working of miracles is about. Because that's part of the you don't know it, but it's all part of this higher level of attainment. So, my goodness, it's for real. And continues on. We don't have to fully understand. It's like the Dano telling me, don't pay attention to how this works, and then look at what I'm drawing. This is the important factor. The gaining, you might say, of the inward ascent career toward divinity attainment, toward that point of becoming divine, attaining more and more of the character and nature of God, which is love, which is the highest level of our development, to become like God. Yeah. As long as we don't refuse that, we're on a path of you might call righteous development.
Well, it's wonderful that we all have a right for this citizenship and to gain this. Mm-hmm.
To gain, yeah. And then, of course, like anything, you know, is, you know, you're born into, say, a country and you become a citizen of it. It doesn't mean you can exercise full rights as a baby. You do have rights, but you can't exercise them because you don't know how. Other people will work and help you through them. Much like as you gain much of this level of development, eventually you gain a helper, an angel, a teacher, one who will help you and instruct you in the ways of the divine nature. Yeah.
Well, this is... Do you want to say anything else for this hour?
Oh, no, this is
recording. This has been another one of those wonderful times with you.
I'm glad.
Another one of these amazing recordings with you, Michael. It amazes me all the time. I'd like to hear our news people talk about the crop circles and mm-hmm. what is right under their noses, but they seem to purposely avoid subjects. We know they avoid subjects, and that's one of the ones that they do avoid.
Oh, yeah. There were times in which they did publicly acknowledge the crop circles.
And then they publicly said what a hoax they were and a joke.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then
yeah.
Everything was... Right, then it turned into a something to make fun of. But then those symbols and the crops just got more and more complicated, and then they just became impossible to make in the darkness, and impossible to make with the tools we have. And when you bend that food over, usually it snaps, where many of it is just bent down, mm-hmm. or much of it is just bent over. Well,
yeah.
I've never stood in one of those circles, but that would be amazing to do. Well, once again, thank you, Michael, and we'll close and see what happens next week.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha. It's enjoyable to hear people write to us. Thank you again, Kathleen and Wendy. Aloha, Michael.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.